playing in a traveling band from CCR. Good morning, Zach Finos, along with you here on your morning show, CJMQ 88.9 FM. As promised, talking now with the bassist from CCR, Stu Cook. Stu, how are you?
I'm well.
So right now you're actually in Thunder Bay, am I right about that?
Yeah, I'm in Thunder Bay, Ontario.
And you guys, I've noticed, I was just looking over your schedule here as we... Before you come to Sherbrooke, you got Thunder Bay, Minnesota, New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ramah, Ontario, all before you get to Sherbrooke. You guys are all over the place right now with this thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a fairly poor job of routing, doesn't it?
But you really are always on the road with this thing.
Well, not true. We are gone about 120, 130 days.
Okay.
You know, to get in 75 shows. It takes about that much time.
And then after Sherbrooke, you do, I've noticed, within not a very big stretch, you go from New Brunswick to California, so you're coast to coast as well with this thing.
Yeah, I know. We had that one weekend where we're playing some out-of-the-way place in Quebec. I'm not very good with French language.
With the geography of it?
It's, God, I can't even see. It's...
Ruin Noranda. Yes, Ruin Noranda.
Ruin Noranda. Okay. Yeah, now that, and we're having a, we have a private airplane to get from there back to Clare, New Brunswick, and then back to Montreal.
Okay.
So we won't be driving ourselves.
I wouldn't recommend it. There's no need to make that stretch of a drive. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, right. I know. It's we're on a tour bus right now. You know, we have a lot of, we can travel quite a distance at night, and we have a few days off, so it's actually working out okay. What looks to be impossible is just going to be difficult.
But you haven't hit Quebec roads yet. You don't want to be sleeping on a tour bus once you get on the Quebec roads. I'll tell you that much right now.
Pretty bad, huh?
Oh, it's like you're driving on a railroad track. You'll be sleeping in your bunk, and you get the boop boop every few seconds. So.
Oh my goodness. Well, okay. I guess I'll just have to stay up all night then.
unless you can treat it like rocking you to sleep, I suppose.
Well, you know, that's how I kind of feel about the tour bus. Anyhow, it reminds me a lot of sailing.
Fair enough.
You know, as the bus, you know, kind of sways from side to side, it's fairly easy to doze off.
Yeah, it's like having that white noise. Once you get used to something, you kind of need it to sleep.
Yeah, right. I can't say that I sleep any better or worse than I do at home.
So. Well, there you go. Not bad. All right. I wanted to go back in the early days, a little rewind now.
All right.
At first, you were the Blue Velvets. Then it
That's
was
right.
the Gollywogs.
Right.
And then you guys were made to change your name, and you settled on Creedence Clearwater Revival. Where does that come from?
Well, you know, that's just one of those things where you sit around. It's far worse than trying to name a child because, you know, human names are fairly straightforward, but whenever you're naming a band, there's all the other implications.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly what the critics will say about the band's name.
Well, you look at a band like AC/DC, who had no idea of the implications they would be suggesting when they named themselves that. You got to consider all that, I suppose.
Well, I mean, there's stuff that you can't even possibly consider.
Yeah.
All right, so even the stuff that you can't consider is bad enough. Then the stuff that never occurs to you.
Mm-hmm.
Shows up after you've picked a name and it's too late to change it. So at that time, you know, names were pretty crazy for bands. And we thought that we would, you know, try and get one as crazy, if not crazier. You know, after 2-3 weeks of sitting around trying to decide on a name, you know, you're pretty ready to take any name just to get out of the room.
Well, I think in the end you pretty much settled on one of I think what has to be one of the greatest names in rock history. There's very little
well,
debate.
Well, as it turned out, right, but it could have been one that no one, you know,
I suppose,
would ever
yeah.
heard about either.
When you're sitting on that end of the spectrum and you're about to call yourselves Creedence Clearwater Revival, that'll throw up a few question marks of how are people going to receive this name.
Well, yeah, and you know, at that point, you know, it always helps to associate the name with the music, right?
Right.
It's like a name and a picture of some sort. You know, no one had heard the music at that point, and I guess if anything, maybe the name helped. You know, made people curious.
And now you're from California.
Originally, I was born in Northern California.
Okay, that's you guys correct. Are from Northern. And CCR essentially came from California.
Oh, yeah. All of us were born within 50 miles of each other.
So where, I've always wondered since I was a kid, does the Bayou Swamp Rock sound come from?
Well, that just comes out of the imagination. We had a pretty wide-open music palette when we were growing up. There was just all kinds of different musical options that you could listen to on the radio, you know, from country to rhythm and blues to pop, general pop music. There was a lot of choices. Mm. And we all kind of got into the same music. We love the Southern music.
I suppose even in the name, the revival seems to invoke a certain United States Southern swampy bayou Alabama feel to it in a way.
Well, in the sense, the revival, there was in the religious lore of America, the United States, which is an old religious country, the revival, the tent show revival, where people would come and be saved, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that played a little bit into it. That was mainly a Southern phenomenon with fire and brimstone preachers. For us, the word was it referred to the personal revival.
Right, right.
In our career, we'd been doing it for many years and decided, that we would really, take a full-fledged shot at it. And so the revival referred to it wasn't meant to associate directly with the music, but it was more of a personal.
Okay. But you got to admit, as four guys from California, which was the home of the Beach Boys.
True.
CCR is a bit of a diversion from that kind of music that people may have expected out of California.
Well, that was just, people have their assumptions and their misconceptions. That music was just one type of music that was popular in California, and it went with the fashion and the sport of riding the waves. But there was also a terrific rhythm and blues and country music tradition in California, which is we were more focused on the music rather than the phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in the end, whether you broke away from the phenomenon or not, your band was pretty well received.
Yeah, ultimately, we became quite successful.
Needless to say, I suppose. Yeah. All right, so I guess it's time now we actually give a little bit of a listen to a song that definitely defines that swamp rock feel that CCR brought to the stage. This is Born on the Bayou, CCR on CJMQ 88.9 FM. When we come back, we'll still be talking to bass player from the band, Stu Cook. We'll be right back. You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. A little Born on the Bayou. We're talking to the bass player on that track, Stu Cook of Creedence Clearwater Revisited. Going to be in Sherbrooke coming up July 20th at the Fête de la Nation in Sherbrooke. One thing, as I was, you know, saying, Beach Boys and California had that association. Now, especially in film, the music of CCR is so connected in, I think, the national media's brain with the 60s and the 70s in movies like Forrest Gump, Apocalypse Now, The Big Lebowski. It's great soundtrack music. Do you see, do you think, is there anything in there that you can ever see or knew at the time that it was great mood setting, soundtracking music like that?
Nah, you know, we had no idea where this was all going to end up. In fact, we still don't. The music is as popular now as ever, and it's always great to see it used effectively in motion pictures. I understand there's a Creedence song in the movie Hancock. I haven't seen the film
yet. Yeah, there is. I just saw it the other day. And
Creedence, what song is it?
Oh, now I don't remember.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
I'm not sure, actually, which one. I do remember that it came up in it. Do you have a favorite in of the movies that you've seen Creedence be used? Is there a scene that sticks out as one of your favorites?
Well, I always liked Twilight Zone.
Oh, I didn't even know it was used in Twilight Zone.
Yeah, and The Big Lebowski had two Creedence songs in it, and it was written into the script.
There's plenty of mention of the Creedence and losing his Creedence tapes in the script of The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, it became a part of the, you know, it was a funny little bit.
Well, it still exists with my friends today. I mean, that's one of our films that we watch a lot, and any time we're at a party and we want to hear some CCR, we just yell, say, put on the Creedence tapes, man. It's become like the popular thing.
And was there anything of value in the car?
Oh, yeah. Tape deck, some Creedence tapes, and there was a my briefcase.
Million guns are loaded.
That's one of those songs right there that sets the mood, is what we were saying. From Run Through the Jungle from Creedence Clearwater Revival, now Creedence Clearwater Revisited, talking with Stu Cook. So now you've come along, you're now CCR, stands for Creedence Clearwater Revisited. You've gone back. Your original singer, John Fogerty, had one of the most distinct voices in rock and roll. How do you go about replacing it? When you get John Tristo in there now, how was it that you found him and decided he would be the new voice for CCR?
Well, when we decided to try and organize this music project, Doug and I knew that we'd have a few areas that people would be, you know, focused on.
Mm.
Of course, the singing was probably the biggest one, and so we had to look. We had to find a guy who understood the music, understood how to sing the songs. He had to be able to put himself, you know, in the place and approach it from the inside rather than just sing it like he sang all of his other songs. Mm-hmm. He had to kind of get inside the material. And we listened to several guys. We heard some great guys try and sing this stuff, but John Tristeo sung it the most convincingly to us.
He sold you on the experience, I suppose.
Well, yeah, you know, when you close your eyes, you go, well, you know, how does this guy make you feel? And frankly, you know, we were knocked out. We thought that this guy is exactly right for what we're doing. And he's been with us this is his 14th year now.
So essentially, you've been as long involved with this as the original gig.
Longer, actually.
Okay. So it's so it's got its comfort zone, no question about that.
What's that?
I say it has its comfort zone now, no question. There's no, this isn't the voice we're used to with these songs kind of thing.
Well, I think John Tristeo sings them with enough heart and enough strength to make them his own songs as well. I don't think anybody's ever, I mean, there's always going to be someone who doesn't like what you're doing.
Right.
Especially when you can compare it. I think for, you know, singing in the 21st century, I think John Tristeo does as good a job as anybody singing these songs in the 21st century. You know, like, if you look back at the original recordings back in 1970, you know, we're talking about 25-year-old guy singing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, John Tristeo is near 60. You know, I'm over 60. So, you know, I happen to think that he does a hell of a job. I'd put him up against anybody singing these songs. Anybody.
And that's about as good as it gets right there. Fortunate Son, one of my all-time favorite songs. We're lucky, very lucky, in fact, to have with us this morning on your morning show, CJMQ 88.9 FM, Stu Cook, the original bassist from CCR, now playing in Creedence Clearwater Revisited, who will be in Sherbrooke for the Fête de Lac des Nations on July 20th. Get out there to check out what's sure to be a great show. Now, here's one thing. Speaking of, you say, back to the day you were 20, you know, in the years when you were in your mid-early 20s, and you're putting this band together, and you've been playing now with Doug Clifford for all this time. How is that a working relationship like that for that long? How do you sustain an interest in coming and jamming together and continuing to play day in and day out like that?
Well, it's like anything else. If you want it, you can make it happen. We've always wanted to keep our relationship going forward and growing, and you know, it's had its rough patches, as do most, but we've always put the friendship above everything else, and you know, the music came right behind it. So it's just a joy to be able to do that. It's something that very few people have the opportunity to do.
Well, there's yourself, and there's very few other bands who have been able to sustain, you know. There's some bands that claim to be adaptations, be it of Thin Lizzy or something, and we've moved on. But there's really very few of the originals left. This, you two, you know, you've been working together forever. It just seems like a near impossibility. The Stones seem to be the only band that have really done it with that kind of longevity.
Well, Chicago, I have to say Chicago, and you want to throw the Doobie Brothers in there. Mm-hmm. But you're right. There, you know, there's just a handful of bands that can say they have most of their most of the living members involved still.
Exactly. Now, you were saying earlier in the interview that you do up to 120 shows a year.
No. We're gone 120.
You're gone 120 days. Okay.
We keep the shows to around 70, 75.
Okay. But there were supposed to be no big shows when you started. Was this not the revisited deal going to be a private thing when you got back?
Well, we didn't know what to do. You know, the idea was that, sure, let's get together and play, you know, corporate parties. You know, okay. Corporations have parties all the time, conventions, things like that. So we thought, yeah, you know, maybe we'll get some work like that. We'll work a couple of weekends a month or something. You know, we had really no idea that there was a market, that there was a public demand for a band, you know. Especially, you know, I mean, there's cover bands, you know, but we're not a cover band. We got original members.
Exactly.
And we've replaced other members as, you know, everybody else does.
Yeah, as time moves on and you need to find the fits.
Right. So we just, you know, we weren't sure that that there was going to be anything beyond, you know, our small little vision. But as it turned out, you know, there was a tremendous amount of demand for us to play live, and so that, in fact, that's most all of what we've ever done is just to play in public.
Yeah, there's no question the demand seemed to be there, and obviously was there, because I think, if anything, Creedence over time is a band that, if nothing else, gained popularity as more generations and more ears came to listen to it.
You're exactly right. That, you know, as we see our audience now, there's three generations of fans, and so when we hit the stage and we look out there, we see people younger than our own children that know the words, and they're singing along and having a good time.
I mean, that's exactly, it's got to be inspiring to know that. I don't think when you're in, you know, in a basement, in a garage, when you're in your 20s and you're putting a band together, you expect to be somewhere in 30, 40 years from now with the kids in their 15, 16 years old singing your tunes to you while you're cleared 50 years old and stuff.
I know. There's no way that any of us could have imagined how deeply the music has gotten into the you know, the culture.
And maybe now with the seeing bands like yourself do it, kids can imagine this. But rock was essentially brand new when you guys started, and I don't think there would have been any idea that there was the longevity. I mean, had someone told you on those first days of putting CCR together that you would be playing shows in the year 2008, what would have been your reaction?
Oh, I would have laughed in their face. I mean, this reminds me of, I don't know, the senior golf tour or something like that.
Right.
You know, I don't know what to say about it. It's certainly, you know, I mean, there's been a whole industry evolved around, you know, the comeback of classic rock.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, classic rock, and it is one of the main radio genres out there now that is listened to more than almost any other format of radio today.
You know, there's the music from that era was some of the best ever made. You know, it's I think, you know, in terms of, well, it, you know, it's certainly more enduring and stood up to the test of time than just about all other music since then. You know, I mean, there's just not a whole lot of stuff you can say about the music of the 80s and the 90s. I mean, there's been artists that have come out of those time periods, you know, that have become huge. And but for the most part, you know, when you listen, when you go back and listen to you know, to Cream and Traffic and, you know, like you say, the Stones, the Beatles, you know. I mean, that was just some really great music recorded from the mid-60s to the mid-70s, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the mid-60s to the mid-70s, even the late-70s was the height of rock and roll, I think, in its purest form. And you guys, no question about it, made some of the greatest rock of that genre. And it's
thank you very much.
I mean that. I think from being a very young child on, I think, and I'm not alone in this, a lot of people identify with the music of CCR. There's something very rock and roll about what it is you guys have done for years now. And I think it's just great that you're still touring. And I'm excited for your show in Sherbrooke because I haven't got a chance to see it yet in my time. So.
Well, you know, we played there a couple of years ago, and apparently, now what people tell me, that was the largest attendance ever there.
Yep, that was the largest attendance ever when that show took place. I was still in Montreal at the time, so I didn't get to catch it.
I forget the actual, if it was Canada Day or what day we played, but there was a huge fireworks display, which was the finest fireworks that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was for the same thing that you're back for this time, Fête de l'Ac des Nations, and what that happens there is every night there's a new province of Canada that goes up and puts on a display in a competition. Uh-huh. And yeah, it's impressive fireworks, that's for sure.
Yeah. We still talk about it. You know, we're hoping to be able to see something that good again.
Well, they'll definitely be. I don't know what night. I know you go Saturday night. And I don't know what province it is going that night. But generally, they're pretty impressive. No question about that.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to a big crowd. I think they said there was. At the time, people like to throw numbers around, but it was. They said there was 50,000 there. For the fireworks and 30,000 at the concert, which is a pretty good concert.
As far as Sherbrooke goes, that's a big time show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. Very much appreciate talking with you today.
Yeah, that's great. Well, hey, we'll look forward. If you can fight your way back, we'll get your credentials together and fight your way back. Love to meet you. Have a beer.
Sounds like a good plan to me. I'll definitely. Be arranging that. I know I got my credentials, and I'll just make sure that keep
Tucker.
A recording of this and be like, see, he said I can come back.
Yeah, come on, let him back. I'll tell you. I'll tell our tour manager to look out for you.
Sounds great.
All right.
Much appreciated. Thank you for that, Stu.
Okay, be well.
Have a good
Adios.
One. Bye.